Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. It's very natural for us to have multiple ambitions, multiple dreams, if you will, that we want to pursue, that obviously we want to accomplish. And while it's great to accomplish a dream, like having a 6-figure business or scaling your podcast up, there are people who are able to accomplish multiple dreams and even dreams that seem to be completely outside realms from each other. So today's guest has actually been able to accomplish multiple dreams. He is a very successful musician, has a big audience in that space, and he also is a very successful business owner and consultant. So today's guest manages a technology staffing company, SCJ360.com, and a technology staffing product, Shorttro.com. Clients include mid-sized organizations, as well as those that are as big as Apple and GM. He is an author, consultant, business owner, and independent musician whose songs have been downloaded and streamed over 10 million times. He's created and performed custom songs for dozens of private events across the country, including events for Ford's CEO and many others. So as you can see, today's guest has these multiple dreams that he is accomplishing. We're gonna dive right into that. So without any further ado, today's guest for episode 168 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Steve Acho. Steve, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for having me.
Steve, I'm really looking forward to our time together. And before that, I'd like to get some backstory. So why did you decide to become a business owner and musician? And how did that work where you're able to do both of them?
Well, they're kind of the same thing. I mean, the being a business owner, one of the businesses I own is the music business. And I would say it's probably about 20% of my time and income. But I'm kind of an oddball. I think I thrive in a more entrepreneurial minded environment. So I'm the kind of person that's not really a good fit as an employee of a big company. And that's not a knock on big companies or anything like that. I think, you know, people are fits for different sized companies, different growth phases. They want to be on certain size teams. They want to talk about different ideas. And that's, I kind of view my entire career when I look back and when I look at what I do right now as projects rather than career, like jobs, right? I don't really think in terms of jobs. I think in terms of projects. So I have this little music project, right, that I started 20 years ago, and I just started playing music by ear after, I think I was late in high school. And my parents took me to a Billy Joel concert. It was the first concert I ever went to. And I saw him playing the piano and jumping all over the piano. And I just thought it was cool and never took lessons. I just, you know, I'm kind of obsessed with human performance. So I was obsessing about that. And I have a good ear. And I just taught myself how to play and sing. And then that grew from, you know, performing in front of anyone that would listen to performing in front of people that would actually pay to listen to recording music and getting lots of fans over many years. And that's just to me, it's a project, right? It's like, this is what I'm doing with music. I'm recording and distributing music. I have, you know, my songs are in movies and TV shows, and I've performed on TV in Japan and done all these other little projects within that. And so, you know, within music, I'm recording and distributing, and I'm, you know, writing, and I'm performing. So these little mini projects within music. And then with the other businesses that I've been involved in, I lived in Japan for a number of years, and I speak the language. I did my MBA while I was living there and working for the CEO of Mazda. And so I wrote a book on that topic of to try and help Westerners understand how to do business effectively with their Japanese colleagues, customers, whatever it might be. and I continue to do that every once in a while. I will do executive coaching sessions. And then I got into the technology consulting business because I was actually a consumer of these services that my company now sells. When I've been in different business environments in Ford Motor Company and other places. And so I understand how the business works. And so all of these things are just different, you know, size projects to me. And I think just having that frame makes it feel like it's more manageable to me, even if sometimes I feel like I need to get my head examined because I'm taking on too much at one time. But just viewing it as like, hey, I got this music project, right? And here's what I'm doing this quarter. And I've got this project called my technology consulting business, and here's what I'm doing this quarter. And so just viewing it that way makes it manageable.
I really like that idea of viewing your work as projects because it doesn't seem as stressful or as much weight on your shoulders when you do define it as a project. It's something that you pursue entirely by choice. It Sure. seems like something you could back out of whenever you want to. It's just a project. So I really do like that idea of viewing it as a project. It does take some of that stress just by rebranding it as that project. How do you split time between the music and the business side? I know that you only put 20% of your time towards the music, but for people, like some people think that you can't achieve like two big things like that because you got to be all in on one thing. And if you spread your time, then you're going to be mediocre at all these different things, but not master any of them. So how do you split your time and in a sense set boundaries for each of those two things?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I partially agree with the people that would say that if you don't focus 100% on something, then you're only going to be mediocre. I think the idea is to focus 100% on what you're doing at the time. And so if you're spending an hour on something, you know, it's if you use the 80-20 analysis, right? So 80-20 says that 80% of the outcomes or 80% of the results come from 20% of the inputs, right? And this applies to everything in life, from business. I mean, if you own a business and you have 10 salespeople, I can almost guarantee that the top two salespeople bring in 80% of the revenue and the other eight bring in 20% of the revenue. It almost always works out that way. You have a closet full of clothes, and I bet that 80% of the time you wear a very small portion of the clothes in your closet, no matter how big or small it is. And so really, when you decide, and I really like how you brought up the fact that when I said projects, you said, yeah, you get to choose what you take on. It's not like I have a job and I just have to put up with some of the stuff I don't like along with the stuff that I do like, and maybe I'm learning, maybe I'm not. It's like every project that I decide consciously to take on is for a variety of reasons. I think as a business, I think I can make money at it. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. But as a person, I get to work with other smart people, usually much smarter than me, which is great. I get to learn a new skill. I get to learn a new industry. I get to expand my network of contacts. And so there are all these different decisions that go into saying, yeah, I'm going to work on that project. And that I would apply to even a very small project that has an end date, like, you know, could you help with this? Could you volunteer for this charity event that we're doing? And so I can look at it and say, is my involvement really going to have impact? Yes. Okay, great. Am I excited to do this? Yes. Do I think it's a good cause? Yes. Am I going to work with other good people? Yes. And so you're right. I'm consciously taking these things on. But when it comes to how to divide your time, I go back to 80-20. It's like, what are the real question in anything you do, what to apply 80-20 is what are the few, I would say, critical things that matter versus the trivial many in order to get to the outcome, in order to get the most impact possible. And so there are lots of things that I could be doing on my music business, but I really do the minimum viable to keep it going and move it forward that I'm happy with. And that, by the way, never feels like work to me. But I know me, and if I was doing music, you know, quote, full time, and I said yes to every time somebody wanted to hire me, or anytime somebody wanted to ask me to perform at, you know, some kind of charity event or wedding or whatever it is, I would be doing that six nights a week and it would feel like work. And that doesn't excite me. So I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I have a hobby that makes money, but I can consciously decide what I'm going to say yes and no to. And so the amount of work that I have to do to put into it in order to be much better than mediocre is much smaller than if I was blowing it out of proportion and saying like, well, I really need to, you know, if I was looking at like quadrupling my music income this year, then I'd be having a different conversation and spending my time differently. I would still look for 80-20, right? But I look at that in every project and in every business that I'm in.
And it's interesting how you understand that you have this level of success in the as a musician, and you don't want to go too far over that because you would rather work on the business side of things rather than the music side of things. So that is one distinction that, again, like projects and having that choice allows you to do. But one of the things I'm wondering is that you're the business owner, the consultant, you're also the musician. So are you communicating to two different audiences? Like, do you have two email lists? Do you have two social media profiles for each social network? Like, how do you address both of them?
Yeah, well, that is kind of a difficult thing because, as you mentioned earlier, the music business, for example, just has nothing to do with the technology consulting company. And that has very little to do with, you know, business consulting for companies that are looking to be more effective in communicating with their Japanese colleagues. I mean, those things almost have nothing to do with each other. But there are times when there actually is an overlap. So, for example, I've been hired by a number of companies to come in and write a custom song and perform a custom song for their events. And so that requires me to, or it allows me to kind of use my knowledge and understanding of business and my ability to communicate effectively with, you know, C-suite people and have this conversation that says, okay, cool, this is going to be fun. What's the outcome of your event? And let's say they're hiring me to just perform a song. So I understand their business, the department, what their message is. And then I can also be creative and say, what kind of stuff can I make fun of without being disrespectful? But, you know, can I make fun of the CEO? Can I have everybody singing along and clapping along to this or that? And so you're kind of combining, like, you know, the business with the creative process of writing and performing. That's really the only time that they come together. But to answer your question about how I market each one of them, I do kind of keep them separate. So I have a personal Facebook page that's kind of a mix of all the personal stuff that I have and some music. And then I have a dedicated music website, which is just my name, steveacho.com. And I have a dedicated music Facebook page. And so I do tend to keep things very separate. It's funny because I'm such a weirdo that does all these different things, and it's such a hard question for me to answer when somebody inevitably says, hey, nice to meet you. What do you do? It's like, it's like I would advise everyone to practice an answer to that, and I still don't have a great one, I'm embarrassed to say. But I have a website that shows all of the different kind of activities. It is very close to what Derek Sivers says, you know, what am I doing now? And like the site that you have that says what I'm doing now. And that one is at steveachoresources.com. And that kind of links to all the different businesses and my LinkedIn profile and all the other things. So, but to directly answer your question, I market and communicate and engage audiences who are involved in different businesses very differently. So there are people that have no idea that, you know, somebody flew me across to Italy to perform at their private event a few years ago. Those people have no idea that I have a separate business. They just think I'm you know, on a tour bus somewhere and performing in Chicago tonight. you know. So I do kind of keep those things separate, but I am a bit of like a weirdo Batman, right? I have this alter ego and other businesses.
Who also speaks Japanese.
Right.
And you've been able to connect with large companies like the Apples, GMs, and Fords of the world. And interesting from both sides, it's not just like you're doing it from the musical side, but you're also doing it from the business side as well, which is like, that's like even more mind boggling that you're able to do it with both of the dreams that you've pursued. So one of the things I'm wondering is, how exactly do you connect with those large companies? When people are like, I spoke at this event by like, let's say Ford or Apple or like any of those, like how exactly do you make those connections?
I'm trying to think of the big companies that we have business with right now. I actually can't take personal credit for it because those, my partner in the business, she and I own it. Her name's Elizabeth Newbold. She is phenomenal. She is technical, and she is, I mean, she's authored books on business intelligence, which is really the niche, analytics, data warehousing, business intelligence. This is the niche within IT and data that our company does consulting and staffing for. And a pretty good amount of our big company business is really, and she's out in the field. So I'm running the business and she's on site with these companies more than full time. Every company she works for would have her full time if she would say yes. But she says, you know, and everybody wants her. So Apple says, you know, we want you. And she says, I'm busy, talk to Steve. And we end up, you know, working with another one of our consultants. So, you know, a lot of it, like I think most companies that start out and grow that are, you know, small to mid-sized companies like ours, it really does start with relationships, not just of people that know you, like that might know me and my work ethic or might know Elizabeth, but they actually know her work, not just her work ethic, but they know what she's accomplished at other companies. And when somebody who saw her perform this way at one company moves to another company or has a friend at another company, a pretty good amount of our business comes from that kind of relationship or referral. And my take on marketing is always to think big and start small. So if you have a huge client, you're thinking, wow, their budget is probably $10 million this year. That's great. But let me just start with 10,000. Let me just do such a great job that 10,000 looks like 100,000 to them. And then we can go bigger. And so that's really what's happened. I'm trying to think of, we have had inbound calls, but a majority of it has been from relationship or a referral of someone that said, so-and-so speaks very highly of you or Elizabeth, and we have this problem and we've heard that you solve this problem. And to me, that is just the bullseye of marketing, right? Is if you can get that to happen, then what you do is you profile and duplicate those customers when you want to grow your business. So it's not a matter of getting a megaphone and shouting louder and hoping that some number of people that can hear you, some small percentage, you know, of people that drive down the highway and see your billboard are going to call you. I know that 1% of a million people is a big number, but I would rather have, you know, the 100, Kevin Kelly wrote a great article called 1,000 True Fans, right? And it's like the 1,000, as an artist, if you make art, if you can get 1,000 people who are true fans, not your mom and dad, but like you sell art or music or whatever you sell, 1,000 people, to get those people to engage with you and essentially buy something from you for $100 a year is to make $100,000 a year as a quote starving artist, right? And that's kind of the mentality that I look at even with a much larger business is, let's look at the 80-20 of our customer base, the problems we solve, and target them more. So a lot of our business has just come from, you know, Elizabeth just doing an awesome job with one client where she gets referred somewhere else, or me doing a consulting job on something and someone, you know, the CEO of one company referring me to another.
And I really like the idea that you brought relationships into this because as you build relationships, you're going to come across people who they know people very well, who you don't know at all. And that can lead to a lot of great opportunity. And in my experience, those opportunities tend to happen after you've developed a relationship with someone. So my recommendation, right, just keep building healthy relationships. You never know where they're going to lead. But I'd like to go back to this idea that you've been able to accomplish these big dreams and your term projects, because I do see how that takes a lot of the stress off your shoulders and gives you that power of choice. But what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential and accomplishing their dreams?
I actually think that most people are much more powerful than they give themselves credit for. I think that when it comes to skill acquisition, whether that be learning how to play a musical instrument, learning another language, learning a tool, a technical tool, learning how to use Excel, learning finance, learning marketing, whatever it is, that we kind of have this dogma in our public conversation and the way that companies hire, where everybody feels like they have to pay their dues. Like you have to go to a four-year college and then go get an advanced degree. It's almost like you need credentials. And I think the biggest thing that holds people back is that they buy into the fact that in order to accomplish something, they need to believe that they have to have the credibility to even take the first step. Or they think, you know, there's this like, who am I syndrome? Who am I to do this? I mean, when I think of what I've done in music, I mean, think about me. I don't know how to read a note of music. Who am I to write a song that goes in a movie? Or who am I to, you know, write a song and perform on a stage with you know, people that everybody around the world would recognize, when I have no education in this, you know? And it's just having the audacity, or even, you know, the dream, not just the dream, I think the dream is too hazy. Like if you really want to be able to do something, I think everybody underestimates how quickly they can actually be functional with a certain skill by doing the right things, I guess I would say, right? Like there's a way. I always say that I don't teach music. I don't know how to read music or write it, and I've never taught. I've kind of shown some people like how to play the piano, but if I actually taught someone how to play the piano and they wanted to, let's say, learn how to play and sing, or just, you know, bang out some chords so that drunk people at a party can sing along, which is a noble thing to want to do. I, in their first lesson, they would leave my house playing Let It Be or some other recognizable song, right? Like, let's just get right to it. And I'll teach you how to actually do something functional as quickly as possible. And then I will correct how you move and how you sit and all that. But in the context of actually doing the work, doing the thing that you want to do. And that really is my criticism of how most skills are taught, is people think, well, you just have to pay your dues. You just have to play scales for 5 years. And then after that, you know, you can join a band. And it's like, no, in about an hour, you can be playing a legitimate song that people will recognize, and then we can start correcting. And I liken that to, I think the problem is that people look for credentials and attributes. Attributes are like, imagine you want to learn how to swim, right? And somebody says, well, you have to be flexible, you have to be agile, you have to be strong. So, you know, in 6 months, I'll let you get in the water. But for now, I'm going to have you do, you know, jumping jacks and jump rope and push-ups and stretch, and like all of those attributes are super important. But like, push the person in the water and say, you know, swim one horrible lap from one side to the other, and then I'll correct you as you go. Because guess what? You're swimming. It's like, pick up the guitar and play the guitar. Go, you know, you want to learn how to code. Like, go, what's the simplest thing you can code so that you see the outcome? So I think that people underestimate their own ability to accomplish things because they have these self-limiting beliefs around paying your dues and credibility and how you have to learn, you know, attributes and then be able to actually do the work instead of just doing the work. Like, you want to code, go build, like start from scratch and then go build your next door neighbor's fishing store website, or not website, but app, you know, on the iPhone store. Go, like, just go do it. That's your project for the next 3 months. Nobody, you know, you can pick yourself. Nobody needs to tell you. You can just walk next door and say, I want to learn this. I want to do this for you. It's going to be free. You know what I mean? And if people thought that they were motivated but weren't willing to do that, well, then that's a different story. But when they are motivated and what's holding them back is the belief that, like, who am I to do that? I don't know anything about it, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really powerful, because I do feel like people will do so much research just so they can feel a little more confident about doing good the first time that they never actually get to it. So, like, webinars being an example, like, there was a point where I was just doing research for, like, how to host a better webinar, things like that. But I was like, I just got to do this webinar and then I'm going to get better at it as I grow. Right. So, yeah, like,
that's great.
If you, like, have something that you haven't done for a while and you know you want to do it, just do it. It doesn't matter if no one sees it. If you promote the webinar, no one watches it. What matters is that you're actually doing it and you can continue to improve as you do it. So I really love that insight that you provided with us. And one of the things that I want to point out is that some people listening to this maybe that 9-to-5 individual who is, like, has a side gig going, and they may be wondering, okay, I get this idea that Steve's able to, like, be a musician and have a business, but like, I have a 9-to-5 and I'm just trying to do the side gig. So what's your advice for people who have that 9-to-5 job and they want to accomplish multiple things, like, for example, being a successful musician and business owner?
Sure. Yeah. Well, when I had, I mean, I haven't had a real job in a long time, but the last time I had one, I was taking my lunch hour and writing songs. I was taking my, I would take a break and study something. I would, to quote Gary Vaynerchuk, who's just a madman and an incredible business person, his answer to that question is fairly simple, because a lot of people ask that. And he's like, you know, I got it. Like, stop watching Game of Thrones. Stop doing other stuff. If you say you want to do this, and then you come home and drink a beer and say, but I've been working all day, in 6 months from now, you're just going to be 6 months older, right? So, like, do it on your lunch hour, do it before work, come home from work, do what you have to do. And now you have from 8 p.m. until midnight. What are you doing those 4 hours? If you say you want to do it, I mean, that's not a comfortable answer, but you know, it's funny because people think, like, I want to own my own business because I want to decide when I'm going to work and I just want to work less. It's like, I've owned business for such a long time. It's funny that when I actually think about the number of hours that I work, it is a ton of hours, but I love it. I actually never feel like I'm working. So when I go work out on a Saturday and then I take my laptop by myself out and eat lunch and do 3 hours of work, I'm happy to be doing that. I'm not bummed out. Nobody's paying me directly for it. But it's like, I think you have to kind of have a combination of the desire and motivation, right? So for people that have those full-time jobs, you almost have to treat this other thing like it's such a passion. It's almost like, I would compare it to, let's say somebody has a hobby, like, it doesn't matter what it is, motorcycles, volleyball, like, you know, whatever, basketball, let's just take basketball, right? Like, nobody says, I want to play basketball, but I have a job, right? Like, they drive, let's say Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and they meet their buddies at a rec center. They bring their clothes to work. They pack their clothes in a bag. They drive to the rec center. They go play a couple hours of b-ball with their friends, and then they go out for beer. Like, 2 hours, 3 nights a week, nobody would ever say, I don't play basketball because I have a full-time job, right? So like, treat it like it's one of those things. What could you do in 6 to 8 extra hours a week? 8 hours a week is 32 hours a month. If you spend 32 hours in the month of March doing something, it's April right now, what would you have on your new business? And I mean 32 focused hours, right? That, I think that's just how you have to look at it. And if you're not willing or interested in doing that because you're too tired or whatever comes up, no problem. But then you don't get to complain about, well, I can't do it because I have a full-time job. It's just, it's not that important to you. And if you don't go play basketball, that's okay too, but it's just not that important to you. No big deal.
And for anyone listening to this who may be thinking like, you don't understand my schedule, like I have like all these different things that I'm doing. Right. One of the activities that I hear about more and more through the books I'm reading is to track your time. So if like each time you do a new activity, just like put it down on a piece of paper or write it on your phone saying that you did this activity from this time to that time and keep doing that throughout the day. And you'll be amazed at some of the missed opportunities. Like we all have, I feel like we all have missed opportunities, but if you track your time, you're able to really put those missed opportunities into the spotlight, and that'll help you correct and be able to find more time that you can put towards what you're truly passionate about. And throughout our journeys, like just pursuing our passions in life in general, there are going to be certain challenges that we face. And with that in mind, Steve, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Man, there are so many. I always say I've learned more from my business failures after business school than I learned from business school. I guess I'll tell you about one of the failures and what I learned. When I moved back from Japan in about 2000 was the year I moved back, and I was traveling quite a bit for business. I was traveling to Asia and Europe and all over the place. And even here back in the States, I noticed this trend of people with tattoos that had Chinese, Japanese characters on them. And I thought, wow, that's kind of cool, you know, because I was just coming back from Asia. And I started a company with a couple friends of mine that had clothing that was, we actually had the same manufacturer as Banana Republic. We had clothing that featured these different like positive symbols, these kanji symbols that would say, one would say love, one would say courage. And so basically that was the idea, right? We're gonna capitalize on this trend of people having these, you know, they're literally wearing these things on their bodies because they like the look and it's meaningful to them. And we started this company. Now keep in mind, this is before PayPal, this is before, you know, people did not, the biggest negative that I heard from people when we were starting this business is, dude, nobody is going to buy clothing on the internet. You have to touch and try on clothing, right? And so, and they were kind of right in the year 2000, like that wasn't a normal thing to do. I mean, there were big companies starting to do that. But so that ended up failing, and not because the product was bad. I mean, we sold probably a few thousand pieces of clothing. But at the time, we had to invest in huge inventory. I mean, we had to buy like, you know, $20,000 worth of inventory to get the kind of price that would make it worthwhile and make it a business, right? But then you're investing in inventory that you don't know you're going to sell. And that is probably the biggest lesson that I learned from that colossal failure of both money and time, was to really validate the idea. You can think you have a great idea. You can talk to the smartest people in the world and they'll tell you they have a great idea. But there was no reason when I look back, even though it wasn't easy to get small quantities at the time, now it's super easy to, but there was no reason for me not to just buy 100 of those things and see what sold and how it sold and have real conversations with people that might buy. Because I found that this is a truth that's going to sound obvious when I say it, but a lot of people kind of break this rule inherently when in their business. there is a huge difference between, hey, Mark, if I had a shirt like this that you liked and it had this symbol on it, would you buy it? There's a big difference between that and, hey, Mark, I've got a bunch of these shirts in my truck right now. If you want to walk outside with me, how many would you like to buy? Right? Like, those are huge differences. And so there was no reason to invest in all this inventory, not really knowing anything, but being confident that it was a good idea. Right? So you can have a good idea, but not execute on it well. You can have a good idea, but there's something about the product that makes people not want to buy it that I don't know what it is until I've invested in inventory that I find out I can't sell. So what I should have done was attempt to make a dollar in profit instead of worrying about the unit price and things like that, and really just validate the actual idea. How valuable is this product? Now I'm just speaking generically. How valuable is this product or service to people? Who and how much money are they willing to spend to trade it for this? Like, go validate it. What is your speed to $1 profit? Not, you know, 100,000, not fancy finance sheets and second round funding and all that stuff. Like, very practical stuff. Like, if you can sell this thing to one person, could you sell it to 10? And who are those 10? And can you get to 100? And why or why not? So that was probably my big learning on that one.
And I really like that lesson. And just to strengthen it as well, I feel like when people come up with an idea, it's easy for them to think this is a really great idea because we came up with it. It's got to be a great idea. The thing with that, though, is you may think you have a great idea, but for it to be successful, the market has to think it's a great idea. The consumers have to think it's a great idea. So, as Steve said, thank you. But like as Steve said, just make that smaller investment. Don't order like the thousands and thousands of units when you haven't made your first dollar yet, and maybe just get like the first 100 units. In Steve's case, and wait till you make your first dollar and see what happens. So that's something that people do come up with great ideas, obviously, but it's good to let the outside validate that before you go all in with this idea and like make these wild type of investments. And I do believe we learn a lot from our business failures. Steve can attest to that. Like we could have literally spent this whole interview, Steve and I, just talking about our mistakes. But another way that I really think we learn a lot is by reading books. And with that in mind, Steve, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Yeah, sure. Well, one of the authors that I really like is Tim Ferriss. Tim has a handful of best-selling books. He wrote The 4-Hour Workweek. That was his first one. And his, what's the name of his most recent, Tools for Titans.
Oh, Tools. Okay.
Tools for Titans, is one that's just great because he interviews people that are just world-class performers or artists or business people or athletes. And he just kind of like teases out all of their routines and habits that make them so effective. So I really like that one. I like all of his work, but Tools for Titans is a great one. There's one that I guess this helps in business and just in life. There's a book called The Psychology of Persuasion. I think it's called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And it just talks about all of our cognitive biases that we have. And of course, you can apply this in, you know, relationships and in business and pretty much anything you want. But it's just fascinating how psychology works, how humans actually think. That's another book that I recommend. And the third one, and this is just straight business, is by a guy named Jay Abraham. And it's called Getting Everything You Can Out of All You've Got. And I think he is just absolutely the king of applying 80-20, figuring out in terms of your customer base, in terms of your advertising dollars and marketing, in terms of your resources and employees, how to leverage the utmost out of the smallest amount and scale that in such a practical way. And the guy has just you can't even count the examples, and they're all in different industries. They are private sector, public sector, their products, their services, they're international, they're online only, they're, you know, and all these different ways. I think the biggest thing you learn from him is just perspective, because he'll do something, he'll give examples of where he'll take a concept that's really well known in one industry, like, for example, the timeshares. You know how those timeshare businesses work, where they invite everybody out to this, you know, beautiful place, and they'll buy you dinner, and all you have to do is listen to this spiel, right? And then some number of people will buy into these timeshare things. Well, he applied that in a business that had just nothing to do with that. That nothing to do with the industry. They were selling a product and not a service. And so it's really interesting when somebody can just can look at a business and apply things from other industries or businesses and basically just repeat things that have proven to be effective. So that's another book that I really like.
Steve, thank you for those great book recommendations. For any listeners who want the links to those notes, those will be in the show notes at markgaberti.com/E168. And if you want a book on how you can create, promote, and optimize your content for growth and revenue, you can grab your copy of my book, Content Marketing Secrets, over at markgaberti.com/book. And before we wrap up this episode, Steve, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
One question we should ask ourselves more often. How can I be better tomorrow than I was today?
I absolutely love that question. That's the question right there of how we become better people and how we become higher performers. That question right there.
Spoken as two highly obsessive, compulsive people looking at performance improvement, right? No wonder we get along.
Well, Steve, I've really enjoyed this interview, and you shared a lot of great insights with the listeners. For anyone wondering where to find Steve, you can head over to his site, steveachoresources.com. Of course, all these things will be in the show notes. And he's got a lot of bonuses just for Breakthrough Success listeners. If you go to steveachoresources.com/breakthrough, there are a few things waiting for you. There's a 2-3 page summary of his book, a link to a video with a 15-minute presentation on strategic advice for hiring and getting hired, and you can even get a free 15-minute consultation session about hiring or getting hired. So if any of those three things or all three of them are interesting to you, steveachoresources.com/breakthrough is the place to go. And I also want to mention one more thing that Steve is doing. Also, don't connect with him on LinkedIn. Don't forget to do that. That link will be there too. But he also has a blog, hereiswhatilearned.com. I actually read through it a little bit before our interview. I really like the blog post. They're like really short, sort of like Seth Godin style, where it's like less than 100 words per post, but there's a lot of insights in there. So hereiswhatilearned.com is another place where you can see Steve in action. And Steve, again, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of your great insights with us. It was fun doing this interview. It was great to hear the value that you provided, and it was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark. This was great.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgaberti.com/retweets.